Good afternoon. This is Standard Time on 90.5 WICN. I'm Steve Miller. I am keeping the seat warm from Tom Newley, who will be in a moment. In the meantime, we're going to start off with some music. Here's the group Blue Moods on 90.5.
Thank you. The night is young, the skies are clear, so if you want to go walking, dear, it is delightful, it's delicious, it's de-lovely. I understand the reason why you're sentimental, cause so am I. It's delightful, delicious, it's de-lovely. I can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go, so please be sweet, my chickadee. And when I kiss you, just say to me, it is delightful, it's delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious, and it's dilemma, it's delimit, it's deluxe, it's delovely. Time marches on and soon it's plain, you've won my heart and I've lost my brain. It is delightful, it's delicious, and it's delovely. Life seems sweet, we decide it's in the back to get unified. It is delightful, it's delicious, it's the love of Emily. See the crowd at the church, see the proud parson plopped in his perch, hear the sweet beat of that organ pealing of doom. Here comes the groom, boom, how they cheer, how they smile, as we go galloping down the aisle. It's divine, dear, it's divine, dear, it's the wunderbar, it's the victory, it's the wallop, it's the banner, it's the voice, and it's the lovely.
Thank you. Well, we just heard Anais Reno live on record. That's her latest release. It's called At Pizza Express Live in London. And if you've been listening along here on Standard Time, we just heard Anais Reno with a quintet live in studio. And now we have Anais Reno live in our air studio to talk to us about music, her work, jazz in general, and everything else. Welcome, Anais.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's really great to have you. I'm going to start off with a musician's question. So I was sitting there just a few feet away from you and hearing you kick off songs and start singing without getting the first note. I mean, Frank Sinatra needed to get the first note. Do you have perfect pitch?
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that that's so much a talent thing.
Okay.
If anything, it can be a hindrance at times. I try to ignore it a lot.
Yes, yes.
So I'm not exactly trying to use it at every chance possible, because it doesn't actually do anything for your musicianship necessarily.
Right, and also if the band is a little out of tune or comes in wrong, it can be very annoying. I could imagine.
Or it's not even if the band's out of tune. If I'm out of tune, if I'm in tune with myself, like we're just we're just pitched differently.
There you go.
That messes with me.
Okay.
But again, I'm not unique in that way.
So tell me, obviously you started singing at an early age. How did all this come about? What made you start to sing, and how did that go? What was that like?
Well, singing in general is a different process of how that came about for me than singing jazz specifically.
Okay.
Singing was more organic. I have a very musical family. My dad used to be an opera singer. He stopped by the time I was 1.5-ish.
Okay.
And my mom's a classical violinist. And so while there wasn't really jazz in the household, there was always music. And I would sing around the house, and I think specifically my parents heard me singing, what is it? It's from Aladdin, A Whole New World. I think I was 5, and we were in Switzerland at the time, actually.
Okay.
And I remember they were sitting in the doorway, standing in the doorway, and I was singing in the kitchen, and they said, cool. There's something, potentially.
That's great.
But it didn't go anywhere for a couple of years until I started taking lessons and then got further introduced to jazz by my voice teacher. And
this is when you were about 7 or so?
Yeah.
Cool. So you're taking voice lessons pretty early on.
Relatively, yeah.
Of course, you came from a musical family, so they kind of understood the importance of that. So tell me, I think we talked about this before, but when I mentioned to a friend that I was going to be working with you and have you on the air and mentioned your age, she said, oh, it's really interesting that she decided on jazz. How did, as if, you know, that was unusual or something to look down on. I, of course, I'm part of the true believers, but I think jazz is maybe perhaps the highest form of musical expression. How did you come to jazz? Why jazz?
I came to jazz because, as I mentioned, I started vocal lessons, and there was, I think it was my second vocal teacher ever. I was 8. And I was working with her through the 92nd Street Y. Her name's Sarah Tolar. And she suggested a couple standards for me because she thought it would suit my voice well. I didn't think much of it at the time. I didn't realize that that would become such an identity of mine, musically or otherwise. But it very quickly integrated itself into my life, and I, now that I'm going to college, have been surrounded by many other people around my age who are interested in jazz and who are phenomenal at it and who are working towards creating a career in it. And I had no idea at the time that it was going to lead to this.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I've just seeing your video clips, I mean, you are performing with some of the best, whether it's Benny Benack or Emmett Cohen. I mean, that's, of course, New York is the place to be. So, we just talked about jazz, but I noticed on your live album you have a Billy Joel tune. So, you do cast a wider net than just simply jazz.
It's interesting that you say that, because this last album that you mentioned was an effort on my part to not be so jaded within myself about what kinds of tunes I'm choosing.
Okay.
Because my first album, which was released in 2021, it was The Music of Ellington and Strayhorn. And that is still my absolute favorite. Mm-hmm. And all power to it. And I don't think my love for that will ever falter or drop from the number one spot in my world. Mm-hmm. But I was very much of the ideal in my head that it was only that kind of music and nothing beyond it. I couldn't do too many tunes that are super well known that people might roll their eyes at. I couldn't do anything that might be considered not quite jazz or not quite songbook or however you want to categorize it. And since coming to college, I have learned how lame an outlook that is for me to have. I think because, and I think different things work for different people, right? For some people, being in one lane is a great thing. And I am generally in one lane. I do consider myself a jazz singer, and I know, and I have worked with people in the jazz community, and that's what I'm studying. But I do find that if I want to sing a Billy Joel song, it's not a big deal. It's a beautiful song. And that it can be as simple as that.
That's really great. So you talk about singing at 5 and lessons at 7. I've heard a couple of different ages, but you went on mic at an open mic at Birdland when you were 12, is it?
Mm-hmm.
So how did that come about? I mean, you weren't walking down the street, oh, hey, there's Birdland, let me go in. How did you, it must have been a very intentional act. Was that something that you did in tandem with your parents? Did you just say, Birdland's where it's at, I want to be there? How did that all happen?
Honestly, I didn't know much of what was going to come from that. It had been recommended to me by a pianist that I knew named Jeffrey Pugh. And he said, listen, I know you're singing jazz. This could be an interesting thing for you. But again, I didn't know what to expect. And it was really fun. And over time, as I would go there, I became closer with the owner, Gianni Valenti, and I got to know the community that they have there, and they have some really wonderful people working there, playing there often. And it's through that that I met a lot of the musicians that I know today. And over time, as I was 14, 15, 16, I started to headline my own shows there, and here we are.
Yes. So I also have seen you quoted as saying, you are going to be a jazz singer. That's what you're going to do with your life. Was that a gradual process? Did you all of a sudden say, you know, this is great. I'm not going to do anything else. This is what I want to do with my life. How did that all happen?
I think it was a gradual process.
Uh-huh.
I think it integrated itself into my life. And then one day I thought, yeah, I can't imagine not doing this.
Uh-huh. That's great. That is wonderful. I think I mentioned to everyone I know, I just finished reading the encyclopedic biography of Sonny Rollins, and I think he knew by age 8. It's like, there's no other way for me. This is what I'm going to do. It's pretty amazing when you feel like that. I'm superannuated, and I still don't know what I really want to do with my life. But so you mentioned that Strayhorn is perhaps your most favorite jazz composer. But you know, just thinking about this the other night when I put these questions together, there's so many great songwriters or songwriting teams out there, Rodgers and Hart, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Harburg and Arlen, Johnny Mercer, Hoagy Carmichael. Any particular favorites in addition to Ellington and Strayhorn? What do you like? And I'm putting you on the spot, but why? I mean, or is it just an emotional thing? You don't like, I like this.
In terms of Ellington and Strayhorn?
Or no, in terms of like songwriters.
Other,
yeah, I mean, what do you,
that I like?
You know, I mean, when I'm not much of a musician, but when I play, it's almost always Rodgers and Hart, and I can't tell you why, except for I think their chord changes are understandable for someone like me. So who else do you like? Who do you gravitate towards?
That's a good question. I can't say that I've strictly compartmentalized them in my head as on certain levels, but because all I know is that Ellington Strayhorn is up there, and then there are plenty of others that I also love.
Sure.
So I'd say, just to name a few, Thelonious Monk, of course, is a huge one. He's phenomenal.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Amazing, isn't he?
It's a similar thing to Ellington and Strayhorn in the sense that I feel that it is so human and so nuanced, because I don't get the sense, and I don't consider myself an incredibly seasoned composer, so I can't read their minds, of course.
Okay.
But at least singing their songs from a vocalist perspective. I get the sense that they weren't so concerned with, does this have to sound like what we expect it to sound like from the get-go?
Yeah.
It felt very much, what are the motivations that align themselves with this song going to lead the song to do? And there's something so human about that. There's something so comforting about that, because especially as an angsty teenager or whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm not angsty anymore, by the way.
Okay, good to know. Well, there we go.
You know, we all go through those moments where we're like, God, nobody understands me. Mm-hmm. Mom, you know.
Yes.
And, but then I was like, oh, but these songs understand me. And
that's so interesting, because I always found there was real depth and nuance in the Great American Songbook. Some people don't think that way. Oh, you have to be a singer-songwriter, you know, like the Beatles. Or no, I think there's great depth in these songs, and I'm glad that the world is, you know, feels the same way. The thing that always strikes me about Monk is, you talk about nuance, and they are, but they're so memorable. It's almost like, if you're not listening closely, it's a nursery rhyme. And I think those are the toughest to write, because, you know, these nursery rhymes have been around for 200-500 years. We're still singing them because they work. Mm-hmm. And that's what Thelonious Monk does. And so do you have any Monk in your repertoire?
Yeah, actually, on the record that you were playing a bit of before, Panonica is on there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I love that song.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, but I mean, like you were saying, that it's almost nursery rhyme-ish. It's an interesting way to put it, because I think it's a tough line to straddle. And as somebody who's been working on writing music myself and has been a bit shy about it in the past and today, you want to make it so that it is memorable and so that it can be reworked. That is the beauty of jazz. You can bend it, you can twist it all sorts of ways. But at the same time, there has to be a sense of honesty about it. There has to be a sense of motivation behind it, of incentive. And it sounds so much easier than it is.
Oh
my gosh.
I would imagine, as someone who's never tried, I find it, to me, would be daunting. But when you said that a couple of minutes ago, so you're composing, and you mentioned you're shy. So when are we going to hear some Anais Reno compositions performed by you or put on
As of late, I've been performing one in particular.
Oh, okay.
At most gigs where I can.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to get used to it.
Yes.
And I've noticed, since doing so a few times, it does help to have the repetition, because then it starts to work its way into your repertoire as just another tune that works in your set list, rather than, this is the daunting one, this is the one that's coming up that I wrote about this specific thing.
Sure.
And I am trying to also work on incorporating that into more tunes into set lists, because, like I said, I've been shy about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also plan on, probably next year, whenever I'm looking to record again, recording it as well.
Great. We're talking here on 90.5 Jazz Plus for New England with New York vocalist Anais Reno, who has performed all around the world and performed in our own intimate performance space, Studio 50 here in Worcester, Massachusetts, for a live concert with a quintet of members of the Compact Big Band. And we will talk about the Compact Big Band with Al Saloki in just a moment. But singing with a quintet, or maybe even a pianist, I think of as a very different discipline than singing with a 19-piece big band. So, and I could tell you what I've heard, but I'm not a singer. Tell me, how does that work? Is that a little different? Do you have to try to make sure that you're not singing against the band and working your phrases in? Tell me the difference between doing that.
Yeah, there's definitely a big difference. Uh-huh. I have a lot more small group experience than big band experience, but in the last couple of years I've been doing more big band, and it requires very different disciplines, because both of them require that you listen to the people around you and that you're communicative. But at the same time, typically as the singer, with exceptions of course, in a small group ensemble, I'm calling the shots.
Right.
If I want somebody to solo at a certain time, if I want to take a solo that we didn't plan for, most of it doesn't tend to be planned anyway.
Right.
Even if we rehearse many times, things that I might decide to do or that even the other band members might decide to do are very different. And we're listening to each other because we're not sure what each other is going to do at any given moment.
Right.
With a big band setting, it's very different. The big band's going to play what they're going to play. And of course, we still need to be listening to each other in terms of dynamics, in terms of feel, where the chord note is, all of that stuff. But I need to be unless an arrangement has been written for me and how I sing a tune, I need to be correlating what I'm doing with what they're playing. If I don't come in at the right time, it could be a disaster. It's as simple as just somebody else takes a solo typically. It's a very different discipline, both of which I think exercise very important yet differing muscles in the jazz realm, I'd say.
And having worked with you on a big band gig, and if I'm wrong, please don't correct me, but I don't remember you coming in wrong, so you seem to be doing well.
I will not correct you.
Oh, thank you. I do want to move along and talk to Al Soloki in just one second, but I think I want to play another cut from your latest album, so let's see if, when I press this, we have the right cut.
Softer than silk, and as warm as warm milk, light as air, and able to fly. Lost songs, no bliss, while they're waiting for her kiss. Panonica, my butterfly. Fluttering one, fair and bright as the sun, light as wind, embracing the sky. Colorful wings, soft and gaily painted things, Panonica, my butterfly. Like the lovely flowers, I'll wait for hours just to feel that touch, the touch that I love so much. One day she'll flutter by. Things such as butterfly wings, poets can't describe, though they try. Love played her tune when she stepped from her cocoon. Panonica, my lovely, lovely. Thank you. Describe, though they try. Love played the tune when she stepped from her cocoon. Panonica, my lovely. Panonica, my lovely. My lovely little butterfly. Thank you.
So, Anais, that was Panonica, obviously, from your new CD. We were just talking about Thelonious Monk tunes, and that's one he wrote. It's not your typical, you know, it's the lovely sort of lively jazz song. It's kind of, you're right, it's nuanced and low-key and emotional. You love Monk, but tell me about that tune, how you put that together, why you put it on the album.
I just love that tune. I had been wanting to sing it for a long time. Uh-huh. And I'm so happy that Carmen McRae did her album mm-hmm. of Monk tunes, because a lot of uh-huh. those songs had not been recorded with lyrics before that.
Oh, really? Were those yeah. things that she wrote, or she had someone write?
There's
for
a
her?
Lot of John Hendricks lyrics oh, on there, yeah. Gene Leese. She had different arrangements, like Round Midnight. There's, you know, it's like the most recorded
yes.
jazz tune by a pianist or something
yes,
like that.
Yes.
But with her version, she had the two different sets of lyrics and the intro and the outro. And so from that record, I had been wanting to do something that without it, I wouldn't have thought to sing. And I always loved Panonica. It's such a gorgeous song. I really love music that is about being fascinated
yes.
by somebody else or something else, and when it compares it to nature in some way. I love nature uh-huh. imagery. I love uh-huh. nature poetry and connecting it to people, and that's why I love Strayhorn too. Passion Flower,
sure,
as we did today,
sure.
is about just that. And it felt like a good opportunity to put the tune together when I had to put a whole repertoire together
that's,
for this.
That's great.
CD.
So I'm going to now shift over to Al Saloki. And as I mentioned during the concert, one of the reasons why you are here in the first place is that you're going to be performing with the Compact Big Band. And I'm going to ask Al for you to kind of walk us through that. When's the date? Where's it going to be? If people want to get tickets, how do they do it?
Well... Excuse me, I wait all this time and then there's a
there
frog in my throat.
By the way, we're talking to Al Saloki. He's the leader of the Compact Big Band, and he doesn't really like to be on microphone all the time, unlike me. So thank you for being here and agreeing to come on air.
I think you speak the truth about
yes.
both of us.
Okay.
But
sure.
but thank you. First order of business is to thank you and WICN and the management here and the person to my right, Anais and my quintet,
uh-huh.
For making all of today possible. Everybody had a role in that, and I was just the straw that stirred the drink, as they say, but a big thanks to everyone and the listeners and friends that had been texting in as quality control, saying
uh-huh.
how great it sounded.
I'm so glad.
Over the internet.
Yeah.
And, you know, WICN has just such a great mm-hmm. reputation for featuring not just jazz artists, but younger jazz artists, emerging jazz artists.
Yes.
So this all fit together, and I know it was a special Tuesday edition. But one of the reasons I thought we should do this is because of Anais's second album that debuted fairly recently, and also... Truth in Advertising. It was going to be a little bit of advertising. I want to tell you about her appearing with us at City Winery Boston on Sunday, May 19th. Okay. We've had her sing with the big band once in December 2022, but that was at a swing dance, closed admission at Boston College. So we've been waiting for things to align again with everybody's schedule for an indoor, good weather a gig and a great place, and May 19th on a Sunday, it's going to be all of those things. At 7:30 that evening, we're going to do a two-hour show. It'll at City Winery, which is a great place to hear a band, a performer, in the big room, as they say, and it's a fun place to eat and a sustenance and libation and great sound system. And it's our opportunity to have our first non-holiday show there. Great. We've done four of those.
That's great. I just want to let people know you're listening to Al Saloki, leader of the Compact Big Band, and Anais Reno, jazz vocalist, here on 90.5 Jazz Plus for New England. We're based in Worcester, Mass. And if you're in central Massachusetts, you're probably listening on 90.5 FM. And around the world, you can stream us on WICN.org. And so, Al, City Winery is a pretty cool place. If people want to purchase tickets on May 9th to go to the May 19th show, how do you do that?
Pretty easy. You can go to City Winery's website, a very cool website. They are very active on Facebook. Uh-huh. On Instagram, they have this marketing stuff down to a science. Mm-hmm. If you forget where it is, you can go to compactbigband.com, and there's a convenient link right to the ticketing website. And tickets have been on sale for a while, right. And we're hoping for a great audience. Great. As I said, it was our opportunity to do something swing, jazz, non-holiday.
Yeah.
And I've been wanting to get Anais up for mm-hmm. a while to something from New York City. We have a great rotation of Boston area vocalists, but this is a little something different for us. So citywinery.com/Boston or compactbigband.com. Either road will get you there.
And I'm going to, because people have asked me about this, we all know how to spell Compact Big Band, but spell it out so people know what we're talking about.
Yes. C-O-M-P-A-Q, Big Band. I think I don't have to spell
and
that
all
out.
All one word, no dots or anything.
All one word, compactbigband.com. And we have a Facebook page that I update. Yeah.
And so now I'm going to switch it over to Anais for a second, because as we were coming into the studio, one of the hosts here said, you know, I've heard so many different pronunciations of Anais's name, and people may be wondering out there in listener land how to pronounce it properly and how to spell it. So Anais, I know this is like the ABCs here, but spell your first and last name and then pronounce it so we all know exactly what we're looking for. And thank you for alerting me to turning on the microphone. See, let's talk about ABCs. Like I said, I'm still learning how to do it in studio. So Anais Reno, how do you spell that?
A-N-A-I-S. The I has an umlaut. That's not necessary, but it is appreciated. Okay. Last name, R-E-N-O. It's spelled like the city, Reno, but it's pronounced Reno. Anais Reno.
Right. So when I was a kid, I was an English major, and there was the French novelist, and we all thought it was Anais. Is that a legitimate American pronunciation, or are we just not understanding how to say Anais? I'm just curious.
I can't speak for
okay.
the whole of Anaises in the world, but I would say that Anais, unless somebody specifies otherwise or doesn't have the umlaut on the I, doesn't seem right.
Okay.
But then again, don't take my word for it. I know for me, Anais would be the correct pronunciation.
Sure. And I mean, it's amazing how things come to be. You know, I not that I speak the language, but I am Italian-American. And the city in Italy was, to me, Milan. And then I went to school in Ohio, and there was M-I-L-A-N, Ohio. It's Milan. Milan. It's Milan, Ohio. So so Americans do kind of, like, destroy pronunciations and all that. So what is next for you? You mentioned something about maybe a year from now doing another album. Do you have a full slate of engagements coming up other than Compaq? I mean, where are you at next, and what are you trying to do for the next stage of your career?
Yeah, so in terms of albums, this isn't what I was talking about earlier, because I have yet to record what I was talking about earlier, beginning of next year, exact date, TBD, I will have another record coming out, a studio record.
Great.
With Peter Bernstein, David Wong, and Joe Farnsworth. I'm excited about that
one. Oh, that's really great. We've been playing a lot of Joe Farnsworth because he's
fabulous.
He's one of the hot drummers around, yes.
And in terms of gigs, next month is a pretty busy one, actually. I am playing Chris's Jazz Cafe in Philly on April 13th with Michael Kanin, David Wong, and Matt Wilson.
Okay.
And then for two consecutive Saturdays, on April 20th and 27th, I'll be at Birdland upstairs.
Oh, wow, that's great.
It's just going to be a trio, including me. So first week is Michael Kanin and Samir Shankar. And the second week will be Adam Birnbaum and Neil Minor. I'm very excited for that.
Oh, that's great.
So those are the next big ones coming up, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
And just want to talk a little bit about your education. I'm sure people have brought this up before, but you're in SUNY, State University of New York, Purchase, in the jazz vocal department.
Yes.
And that's where someone that many people have heard of, Samara Joy, came from. How did you wind up going to Purchase? I'm assuming that you enrolled before Samara was around and famous, or is that how you learned about the program?
I knew about the program for a while because I knew a few professors there, such as Pete Malinverney and Alexis Cole and David DeJesus. I knew them from being in the city, really. And Purchase felt like a good candidate, a good option, and ended up being the one that I went for. A big part of it was the location, and the faculty is really great. I mean, it's just one heavy hitter who you could learn a million things from after another. And I've become quite close with some of the professors there. Uh-huh. Adam Birnbaum, who I mentioned will be on one of the Birdland gigs, teaches there. And I knew about him before Purchase, and then I got to learn from him at Purchase, and that was a great experience.
That's
So it's been a great thing for making connections to other students, to the professors, to, of course, learning about the music. And the location is great because it's right next to the city.
Oh, that's great. And I want to shift over, maybe talk for a couple more minutes here on 90.5. This is Jazz Plus for New England. We're at 90.5 FM in Central Mass and WICN.org, streaming around the world. And we're talking for Anais Reno and Al Saloki. And Al, shift it over to you. I think I heard a rumor that the Compaq Big Band, if you want to trace its history back to when it was the DEC, Digital Equipment Corporation Big Band, has an anniversary coming up. Has it been around as long as I've heard? What's going on? What's the anniversary?
Yes, the rumors are true.
Okay.
Next year, a year from the March we're in, the band will be 50 years old.
Wow.
So, not to steal the phrase, but what a long, strange trip it's been.
Yes.
Circuitous path to the good place I think we're in.
Absolutely.
With having really good musicians, very dedicated musicians, a lot of people that give up every Wednesday night of their lives. I think there's some wives and children that have hated me for years over that.
Yeah.
Plus the gigs that we do. And for a big band, we're still fairly busy, even in today's climate.
Yes.
And we get to play some very, very cool gigs like City Winery and others. And I don't know what we're going to do for the 50th, but we'll do something creative. But we also have wonderful vocalists, both locally and now far away from at the end of Amtrak. Well, it's not the end of Amtrak. But I think you would ask me a question earlier, maybe about how I got to know this this wonderful woman. You kind of know the story. I don't know if you all know all of it, but anyway, she won't hate me. It was May 2022, and I'm on Facebook, like many people are. I follow Tierney Sutton, who I've admired her work for years, and came upon one day. I always try to notice where she's playing and when. I want to go see her sometime. And we've also started doing charts the last several years that Chris Walden in L.A. arranged for his big band with featured Tierney. So things come up on my feed, and one day it came up, and I'm gonna screw up the story, paraphrase a little bit, but it said, hey folks, hey fans, I'm supposed to be on the East Coast, but I've got COVID in May 2022. People were trying to emerge from that and figure out masking and precautions. And she said, I'm testing positive, but my band is testing negative. I think that was the story. Yeah, she's nodding yes. And I don't think I saw the notice about the Chris's Jazz Cafe Philly gig, but I did see the one about the same language about Birdland coming up in New York City. And she said, but my band is testing negative, and I have this wonderful young vocalist who's going to fill in for me with my band. And I looked at it, and one of the most judgmental, silly, stupid things I probably ever thought to myself was, oh, wow, a picture, that's a pretty girl. I said, I wonder, but why is Tierney Sutton turning her band over with a Birdland gig to someone so young? And, well, idiot me. Then I clicked on the link, read Anais's bio, and one click on one track was, that's why she's subbing in for Tierney Sutton at Birdland. And from that, I looked at some more videos. It was enough to strike up a conversation in email. I said, hey, how much big band stuff do you do? Not much. Been to Boston? Not really. One thing led to another, and the rest is unfolding history, I guess. And I got to see her shortly, I think, after. I said, why don't you come up in December? The only thing we're doing is a small thing at BC. But I got to hear her live in a good friend of hers, great friend of jazz out in Western Massachusetts, John Ans, and his wife have home jazz concerts. And he's mobbed up with a lot of great New York City jazz performers, and I got to be present in his living room one night in October, I think ish. Ani sang with us at a swing dance at Boston College in December of that year. So it's been too long having her back, but we're really happy about the City Winery gig coming up with her. It's going to be a program of a fair amount of Ellington, Strayhorn, Ella Fitzgerald tunes, some Ellington, some Strayhorn, some somebody else, I don't know. Billy May here and there, John Clayton, fabulous big band arranger, a couple of charts from him. It's been wonderful. I just can't say enough good things about her talent and professionalism, and so easy to work with. And there, as you well know, there are some people in the music world and in the jazz world that aren't great to work with.
Oh, you know, I find that so shocking. You know, my observations to this are, first of all, I didn't know the entire story. It's a pretty amazing story. Second of all, as someone who's a communicator and tries to predict what people will do and what corporations will do and then try to message around it, Had you told me that at the beginning, I would say, you know, Al, give it up. That's not going to happen. She's not going to sing with you. You're not going to get her. And I think the lesson is, you know, it's like the lottery. It may not be likely that you win, but you can't win unless you play. And I think it's a great story on East. I did, you know, again, if Al and I are kind of friendly, if he'd have come up to me at the beginning, I'd say, get a life. That's not going to happen. And yet, you know, I was on that gig a couple of years ago, and it was wonderful, and I'm going to be on the City Winery gig, and it's a great pleasure. So I am ecstatic that this is all working. We are going to go to the news in a few minutes, but Anais, this was a great, great experience for us, and I think we really, this is what WICN does, puts on live concerts, and I'm so glad you're able to do this for us.
Thank you so much for having us and for doing this interview and just facilitating all this, and thank you, Al, for making this happen as well. I mean, I feel just very grateful to know people who would be kind enough to put an opportunity like this together. Thank you.
You know, it really is, I don't want to say it's a cast of thousands, but just looking out in the audience at the concert we put on an hour ago, these are the people who make WICN happen. I mean, we are filled with volunteers. I'm one of them. We had some distinguished people in the audience, and it went out over the airwaves, and it's just a whole bunch of people wanting to keep jazz alive. And so far, they haven't beat us down yet, so we're keeping it alive. And I really appreciate that from both of you. We're about ready to go into the NPR news, but I want to say thank you to both of you. And I'm going to end with a little bit of one of the cuts from your latest album. So Anais Reno, A-N-A-I-S-R-E-N-O, performing here today at Studio 50 at 90.5. And Al Soloki, leader of the Compact Big Band, who put together a quintet to rehearse briefly and then play with Anais. So Anais, thank you, and Al, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll do this again sometime, I hope.
Yay.
Take care.
I don't know why, but I'm feeling so sad. I long to try something I've never had. Never had no kissing. Oh, what I've been missing, lover man, where can you be? The night is cold and I'm so all alone. I'd give my soul just to call you my own. I got a moon above me, but no one to love me. Lover man, oh, where can you be? I've heard it said that the thrill of romance can be like a heavenly dream. I go to bed with a prayer that you'll make love to me. Strange as it seems, someday we'll meet and you'll dry all my tears and whisper sweet little things in my ears. Hugging, kissing, oh.